Everybody, welcome to 2001st. It is late on July 12th, 2024, but it's a glorious Friday afternoon to talk some golf. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We've got plenty to talk about. We've got Colin Montgomery saying all kinds of gibberish out of his mouth. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And maybe we'll talk a little bit of some Rory McIlroy stuff as well. We'll see what happens there. But the main impetus for doing the show today is Colin Montgomery speaking to the Times of London in an interview. And this thing was quickly aggregated because that's what happens now. There are so many outlets that all they do is just aggregate someone else's work. And I realize I'm speaking out of two sides of my mouth here when mentioning that, because blogging, as it used to be, recreationally, was the start of my professional career. That is not everything that I do now, certainly. And my mind's kind of changed on that over the years, but that's another topic. So Montgomery is speaking to the Times of London in this interview, and Monty says, he's asked about Tiger Woods, and he says, quote, "I hope people remember Tiger as Tiger was, the passion and the charismatic aura, depending on how you want to say it, around him. There's none of that now. At Pinehurst, he did not seem to enjoy a single shot. You think, what the hell is he doing? He's coming to Troon, and he won't enjoy it there either." Basically suggesting Woods should retire, and he should not even waste his time playing the Open next week, for which he is entered and is surely going to compete. He's on the interview list. He's going to be there. He's going to play. And I think that's kind of interesting for a variety of reasons. One, Monty was really had his best effort in an Open and won Tiger 1 in 2005 at one of the two he won at St. Andrews on the old course. So I think that's kind of funny. Two, I think it's kind of funny that a guy playing on the Champions Tour is like, oh, I'll just retire already. I mean, Monty plays competitive golf. He doesn't play nearly as much as he did, but he still plays competitive golf. And I think that's kind of silly. And then to say this kind of thing, like a couple of days before the Open, and I have not read or seen that when exactly this interview was conducted. It could have been conducted a couple of days ago, could have been conducted a month ago, but I get the sense that it was at least this week. And for him to say that, like on the eve of a major, is just asinine. I mean, Monty has said a lot of dumb stuff over the years. This is up there with dumb stuff. And I understand the idea that Tiger is not having fun out there. I actually thought he had, looked like he was having a pretty good time out at Pinehurst for the US Open. He enjoyed executing shots. He hit a lot of good shots. He was frustrated because a lot of putts didn't go in. I mean, if you actually watched how he played and what he did when he played, instead of just watching the end and the news conference after, when he definitely did look defeated, it looked like he was really engaged, having fun, trying hard, and it gave it a good effort. So I don't think he was having a miserable time. And also, Monty wasn't there. So the other thing that he doesn't understand is that it was 95 freaking degrees every day in Pinehurst, North Carolina, in the middle of the summer, where the humidity is basically 100% every day. So that was not pleasant. That wasn't fun to play golf in effective 110 degree heat, and also be frustrated, and also not play to your best. What did you want him to look like? Smiley, happy, cheery? I don't understand. And I know there's no way Monty considered that in what he said, because he's put his foot in his mouth a lot over the years. To that end, however, for as much as Monty is wrong, I do agree that Tiger does not have the same aura as he once did. Of course he doesn't. He's a 48-year-old man. He hasn't won since that Masters. Right? I mean, So what you're trying to tell me then is that an old guy who doesn't win anymore is not intimidating to the younger crop of players who are winning. Well, at least Scottie Scheffler's winning. and are contending in majors. I mean, that's like a no shit Sherlock moment kind of thing. Of course, that's the case. And Tiger has also gone out of his way in recent years as he has gotten older to become more approachable, to seem less intimidating, to try to engage with that next generation of player, to get them to maybe learn a couple of things from, not everything. I think he's still got some stuff close to the vest that maybe he'll save for Justin Thomas or maybe Rory someday or his son, you know, those types of things. I don't think he's given away all his secrets for free or anything like that. But he's been more approachable, been more someone that can be a counsel, someone that you can rely on for good advice. All that is true. And that kind of not destroys the intimidation factor, but it just makes him a different guy to this generation. Monty probably crapped himself thinking about playing against Tiger. And he liked to put up a good fight that, you know, I think about the 97 Masters. He liked to put up a good fight that he wasn't intimidated by the guy, but it was so evident that he was. So when he's talking about the passion and the aura and all, he's saying, I hope people remember Tiger as a killer who beat everybody's brains in. And I don't think that's changing. I don't think anyone is suddenly thinking of Tiger as a washed guy and he was never any good. I mean, it's kind of like those, there's always this like made up tweet that goes around in like meme circles of the, I don't even remember what account it is anymore, but oh, I thought people told me Steph Curry couldn't shoot, you know, that type, like the argument no one's making. This is an argument no one's making. The Tiger is washed. It's stupider than stupid. You know, the people will remember him as the washed Tiger as opposed to the guy that won 15 major championships, 3 US AMs, 3 US Juniors, all consecutively. Let's be realistic, okay? That's not changing. You could have an entire channel dedicated to Tiger Woods' victories and highlights, and if you showed the full tournament, right, if you showed all the coverage around each tournament, you'd have 82 tournaments, and coverage on TV is longer now than it was back then. But in 2 and 3 hour windows each every day, if you showed those highlights, right, that's 82 times basically 16 to 20 hours of tournament coverage. Let's just call it 20 for fun's sake. That's a little over 1,600 hours of just tournaments you'd have to show just to show all of Tiger Woods' wins broadcast in their entirety. 1,600 hours. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy, right? So you could have a full channel just dedicated to that. And then if you wanted to throw in, he doesn't have as many second and third place finishes in majors, which I think is something in Jack Nicklaus's column if you're ever doing the comparison. But you have basically the library that we have for our new TV channel is about 1,600 hours. If we just had Tiger wins, that would match our library of coverage. It's crazy. So I don't think people are going to forget. I don't think people are going to remember him as the guy who's struggled the last several years. Where is this coming from and why is he saying it? I don't understand what the point of all of this was, right? It just, so here's the back part of what Monty said, because Tiger's missed the cut of the PGA, missed the cut at the US Open. So, okay, that's fine. You're 48. And Montgomery kind of took a shot at Woods insisting that he can be somewhat competitive. Now, part of that is he's been the best there's ever been. So, of course, you convince yourself that you can be competitive, and he could probably make the cut. But here's what Monty says. Quote, aren't we there? I'd have thought we were past there. There's a time for all sportsmen to say goodbye, and it's very difficult to tell Tiger it's time to go. Obviously, he feels he can win. We are more realistic. End quote. And to a degree, I mean, I think that's probably the juxtaposition, right? Tiger being the best there's ever been, and knowing he's won a major in the last 5 years, which is kind of wild to think about. But winning a major at that advanced stage of his career with that much going wrong in his health, and it's worse now, probably leads him to believe I'm just one good week away. And also there is this sentiment that Woods has had, even going back a decade to when his back trouble started, and having to deal with the surgeries and time off and all that stuff, that he'd said in multiple interviews, several different interviews, that he was buoyed by the idea of competing in the Open Championship until the end of his career, because Tom Watson almost won the Open at 59 in 2009. And that's 15 years ago. And that is a tournament that you can play in and potentially be competitive well into your 50s. And Watson's not the only guy to prove that point. I mean, Phil proved that point winning a PGA Championship in his 50s. You almost had Greg Norman win the 2008 Open Championship in his 50s. You were that close. I mean, truly that close to having back-to-back guys in their mid-50s or late 50s winning the Open in 2008 and 9. Now, is that an aberration? Yeah, almost certainly. But I also wouldn't put it past, like, Richard Bland to contend next week. So the age thing doesn't matter. Maybe it's Tiger's health. Maybe it's the ability to have enough tournament reps. All those things combined. I get what Monty's saying. Tiger's probably not going to win again. Right? Just be honest about it. But that doesn't mean retire. I don't think. If Tiger wants to play, he, above any other golfer, has earned the right to go out however the hell he feels like. Even if that is a change from what he might have said earlier in his career, that he does not want to be a ceremonial golfer, that he doesn't want to just take up a spot and be out there. And the reason why his mind must have changed on that is because he's fine with the PGA Tour Policy Board giving him a lifetime exemption into the signature events, any signature event that he wants to play in. So he can go play his event without taking away a sponsor exemption. So he can go play at Jack's event and Arnie's event if he wishes. That he could go play any of the other signature events. I don't think it's for that, but that he could if he wanted. That's an indication to me that he's, on one hand, still wants to be connected to the tour and still believes he can play competitive golf and be of value, right? At the same time, I understand, and I've said it before, I think it's time, at least from a marketing standpoint, to move on from Tiger. I know people watch Tiger. I like watching Tiger. I find the very back end of his back nine of his career fascinating. I wonder if he's going to play Champions Tour events, senior events. I think he'd be great. I think it'd be so cool to see him beat the snot out of some guys at a U.S. Senior Open. I would love that. We're still 2 years away from that. Well, turn 49 in December. So, realistically, 26 before you can get him into that position to go play on the Champions Tour. But I hope he does it. I think that would be awesome. And at the same time, he can do this forever. Vijay Singh used to do this. He used to play in these events because he had a lifetime exemption. He wasn't contending, and no one was like, hey, Vijay, retire. I mean, I'm sure there were some talk about that, but there wasn't this kind of public outcry from a peer like, oh, get the hell out of here already. I don't think Monty's the guy to deliver this news at all. Like, you didn't win a major. You were the king of Europe for a decade and a half, which, hey, that's cool. But didn't do a whole lot else relative to, you know, Tiger. If anyone's going to say, like, hey, you gotta walk out the door, man, maybe that's McIlroy. Maybe that's Scheffler. Those guys are never going to say that. JT's never going to say that. Spieth's never going to say that. Ludwig's never going to say it. No, those guys are never going to say that because they know what Tiger meant and what he means. So they're going to let him do it. There's no goodbye. I think Woods will eventually decide when he wants to walk away. But that's on his terms. That's not on Monty's terms. I think it's interesting that this guy, so much, I understand why I got so much play, because it's someone calling for Tiger's to get away, you know, Tiger to walk away from the game. But also at the same time, Tiger's so intimately involved in whatever the future of the PGA Tour is going to be, and we don't know what that is yet. It's kind of hard to say, okay, get out of here and go work on that. I don't think that's going to work either. So here you are, you know. Anyhow, I thought that was worth talking about and at least going through, because I know we've had these at least I've sent, you know, the stray tweet here and there, like, man, and I sent it to the US Open. The guy looks defeated. It looks like he's broken down. Like, kind of, it's hit him that this is just, it's not going to get much better. Or that he was so frustrated that he got no breaks. You know, he played pretty good golf, to be honest. And I think he was frustrated by that just as much as he was that, you know, it felt like he put in a good effort and got nothing out of it. And did it in a, you know, 100 degree heat and on a sponsor exemption, or not sponsor exemption, special invitation from the USGA. It was a lot of things probably. But then to have Monty, like, the week before the Open come out and say, don't even bother playing, man, you're taking up a spot. No, absolutely not. Tiger can play however long he feels like. And Monty, if you'd like to be considered relevant, you can try to qualify or win something, and that'll be enough for me. All right, second story today is a kind of a long one and kind of a sad one. And it's from Golf Week. Adam Shupak broke this story yesterday, and I encourage you to read it in full. I mean, it is a long read. There's a lot to it. But it's basically an unfortunate state of affairs in the relationship between Bryson DeChambeau, his former coach Mike Shy, and how their relationship has seemingly soured. And it kind of centers around this notion of a junior golf tour in Central California or the California Valley. But I think it really deals more with how Mike Shy wants to be compensated and lauded in public for being Bryson's coach, although that relationship has basically ended 6 years ago. The crux of the story, as Adam tells it, and again, I encourage you to read it because I'm not going to do it total justice here. But the crux of the story is this idea that there was supposed to be a junior golf tour, and that Mike Shy was going to run it, and they were going to form, and he was going to partner with Bryson DeChambeau on that. And they were going to name it after Bryson's late dad, John, and Bryson was going to fund the tour to some degree, whatever that degree was. And that in the course of events around trying to put all this together, Bryson basically backed out. And that led to he said, between the two of them, and Mike Shy, who's, again, no longer working with Bryson day-to-day, went public to explain that this golf tour they were going to set up couldn't be operational, threw Bryson under the bus in a message, basically saying Bryson took back the funding he was going to offer, and now we can't do it, and, you know, basically Bryson's an a-hole. And it turns out, I think, it's a lot more about how Mike Shy feels about himself and his role in Bryson DeChambeau's life and career versus what he's gotten in return. And that doesn't have specifically as much to do about this junior golf tour as it does about just general payment. This is kind of the later part of Adam's story, and I think this is really the beginning. This is the explanation, and then the John DeChambeau Junior Golf Tour of the Valley or whatever, that is kind of just a part of it. It's not the main part of it. And it starts from when Bryson won the U.S. Open. Well, it really starts the week prior, because Mike believed that Bryson was going to win the U.S. Open. He was not alone. A lot of people thought Bryson could win the U.S. Open. He's had a great major season. He's been playing great golf, power player, hits the crap out the ball. That's going to all line up very well on a golf course like Pinehurst number 2. So not shocking that Bryson won, or that Mike Shy would think he could win. You know, none of those things, right? But when Bryson won, he, you know, went and talked about members of his team that were helping him, and he kind of listed some individual names, and he didn't talk about Mike Shy because Mike's not on his current team, right? He doesn't really work with him in a half dozen years. And that upset Mike Shy. So Brett Falkoff, who is Bryson's agent at GSE, the same agency that brought like every LIV golfer to LIV, he got a phone call, or Mike Shy gave him a phone call the night of the US Open. And Mike Shy was upset about the slight, not being named specifically as part of the team by Bryson, and that he was upset. You know, he had demands. Like, if you're not going to name me, then I basically want some compensation. And Falkoff said, Mike Shy told him, quote, "It's time that Bryson opens up his checkbook and I get paid. I want $2 million. That's what Falkoff says, Shy said. Now, Shy's been paid about $1 million, according to DeChambeau, who spoke with Shupak as well. So the guy's made plenty of money off of Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, if you made $1 million off of that guy, plus whatever you can market off of him, I'd say that's a heck of a life for most people. Bryson apparently was told what Shy said, and Bryson said there's no way he's paying him, you know, 50% of what he wanted at the U.S. Open. And Bryson said he was willing to compensate Mike Shy for help with a couple of his sponsors like Crank, but he's not going to extort me for $2 million. And Shy does not dispute the ask for the $2 million. In fact, he said he had a list of demands, including reinstating his $60,000 a year contract for the rest of his life that he had been promised with back pay, as well as an apology, which I think is insane. Insane. That's very generous for Bryson to say, I'm going to pay you $60,000 a year for the rest of your life, even when they're not working together. That's insane. And Mike Shy said to Shupak, Mike Shy has to look out for Mike Shy. What the hell, man? Shy then said he received a compensation offer with an NDA for $300,000. And apparently that offended him. He got the offer on July 2nd, rejected it 2 days later. And DeChambeau believes that's his version of making everything good. And I think that's pretty fair. I think that's actually pretty fair. Yeah. And then apparently, you know, there's kind of the next situation is that David Shy, who is Mike's son, had been doing some stuff for Bryson, who apparently they were like putting a putting green in his house and his yard. And Bryson fired David Shy. And I kind of get that, right? Like, if you're mad at the guy's dad, why would you muddy that up and have that involved? Just clean split. And that's what DeChambeau said. Clean split. Paid David for the materials, and then that was enough. So I think that makes sense, too. If you feel like you're trying to be extorted, why would you try to compensate indirectly through his son? I get all of this. And Mike Shy believes, basically, that Bryson should call, fund this tour, which is supposedly $130,000 that he was going to give as a non-recourse loan. Non-recourse loan is basically a loan with no expectation of payment with certain conditions met. A lot of housing situations call for this in states and counties, municipalities. They'll give you first-time home buyer, you know, credit that will help you with your closing costs or down payment or both. And they will give you it as a loan with no interest, no payments, no expectation of payment, and it's forgiven if you stay in your house for 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is, your primary residence, right? That's a non-recourse loan. Effectively, it is a grant, but just in case it goes wrong, they have that kind of caveat to it to make it a loan. And Mike Shy didn't understand that, and Mike Shy still doesn't understand it. And he says, you know what, how he could fix this? He could make a call to me and say he's going to fund it, keep the tour running, put out a statement that he made a mistake and he's sorry. Then everyone would say he's really changed. But that ain't going to happen because it's me. I don't know what it is within him that he hates me so much. And yet, whenever he truly needs something that everyone's going to make fun of, he always calls me. I wish I could figure that out. I've talked to people who understand what a narcissist he is. You think he's ever going to call me to see how I'm doing? He's never done that. Never asked how the business is going. I had to understand what that is. I thought I could take it, but I didn't know I couldn't. You can only be called the names I've been called so many times. Do you know how many times he told me I don't know shit? I'm through being on pins and needles no more. End quote. And it really kind of seems to be like Mike Shy wants to feel like he's the savior of Bryson DeChambeau, and he wants to be able to tell everybody about it and use some of Bryson's money. And Bryson, I'm sure there is, I mean, we've seen the narcissism piece of it, but and he's pretty good at putting on an act these days. I don't know what's true and what's not. But to then try to get and you can feel all those things about that guy and still not want $2 million from him. I guess that's my view of it. You could still think Bryson's a douchebag if you want. But you can't then go to him and go, "You're a douchebag, give me $2 million." But how do you think that's going to be received? Having been on the receiving end of a lot of ridiculous requests as a business person, I tend to side with Bryson here. And Bryson, for his part, who didn't name shine his speech about winning the US Open, said, "I forgot my trainer. I had a lot of people to mention. I'm sorry for it. But at the same point, I'm not trying to go out there and name everybody. And to extort someone for $2 million is a lot worse than forgetting to say thank you to somebody. Could have had an easy discussion about this, but instead he called my agent in a frantic rush asking for $2 million. So you make the choice of what you think is really going on. All I have to say is I paid the guy close to $1 million, and I think you can read the room pretty well in this situation. He's clearly reaching out to demolish me, and that's not going to happen." Now, Bryson said this part, "I'm a big character in the game right now. I'm a big player, and he's trying to take me down, blah, blah, blah." I'm sure there's a reason for bad blood between the two, right? But if Bryson's willing to pay the guy in perpetuity, or at least he said at one point he's willing to pay the guy in perpetuity despite not working with him, I guess how horrible can it be is my takeaway. It's just a bizarre story. I don't have a conclusion for you. I don't have a final opinion for you. It sounds like Bryson, and Bryson's not easy to work with. I'm certain of that. All the tour reps I've ever talked to or heard from, anyone I've ever heard from that deals with Bryson knows he's not an easy guy to deal with. But if you're loyal and you stuck with him, then you got compensated. And you got to know that about your work environment. You're not going to be beloved. You're not going to get all the praise. That's not how this guy works. But if you are loyal, and or at least his version of loyalty, and you help out, and you're gonna get taken care of. And it sounds like Mike Shy couldn't let that go, and now he's in this situation, which is an unfortunate one. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it. Or if you've been watching the live streams, appreciate that too. Back next week with a set of shows. I'm going to be at Solheim Cup Media Day on Monday, so hopefully we'll have some interviews for you from Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Northern Virginia. And then I'm going to be at Nemacolin Woodlands Resort in Western Pennsylvania for a couple of days. So we'll probably do a couple of live shows from there if we can. And looking forward to doing that as well, taking the show on the road a little bit. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, on social media at Ryan Ballingy, except on Facebook and YouTube, where I'm Ryan Ballingy Golf. And Golf News Net is the handle on all the services that we use. Thanks so much for catching the show. We will talk to you next time on Two Off the First.